You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Today is Sunday, January 14th, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 554 features The Ringer's Brian Barrett.
And I'm Evan Valenti, and today's show is powered by FanDuel. Go to FanDuel.com/Boston. New customers receive $150 in bonus bets with any $5 bet.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Sunday. Welcome to Celtics Beat. And if you're listening, watching, hi, Mom. Happy birthday. Evan Valenti, Adam Kaufman, and we have Brian Barrett from The Ringer back with us. We always enjoy having Barrett with us. And listen, these scrub Celtics have alternated wins and losses their last five games. Can we get a sustained run together? Obviously, I'm kidding. They're 30-9. They are the top team in the NBA by a few wins, as a matter of fact, over the next best club. They continue to dominate. Yes, there have been some inconsistencies in their play. Certainly, that's going to happen. But no real downs. Still have not dropped consecutive games. Knock on wood, that doesn't happen anytime soon. And I like the timing, guys, of this particular show, because Boston is fresh off handing a whooping to Ime Udoka's Houston Rockets, 145-113 in the Saturday night game. And there are so many things, obviously, to come out of that game, whether it's things that specifically happened on the floor or what I prefer, just kind of the little stroll down narrative street and what it all means, and doing that with Ime on the other side, you know, after getting doors blown in Milwaukee, a game that was a 40-point deficit or whatever it was at halftime, and Joe quite literally, if he had one, waved the white flag and just said, screw it, and put all the reserves in for the entire second half after the emotional win the night before in overtime against Minnesota back at the Garden. So it was, it's been a fun, interesting, different kind of week. But I do think, guys, there's something just fun. It just feels different. It feels a little bit better. It feels poetic to wax Udoka's club. As good as the Rockets have been, and I think they've surprised a lot of people, they're a 500 team, but man, a blowout felt good in that spot, didn't it?
Yeah, especially considering, too, like, the blowout happened against Ime's 6th-ranked defense, right, where the team has turned it around, or at least they played significantly better than everybody expected because their defense has been good, and the Celtics absolutely shredded. For a while there, it was a close game. I don't mind Jason Tatum getting run out of that game because it was a blowout. I do sort of worry about, like, down the road, him and Porzingis in particular. Like, I worry sometimes about the accumulation, like, when you get into the postseason. Like, Tatum gets a lot of tees. Porzingis gets a lot of tees. But other than that, I thought Jalen was awesome in that game. I thought Tatum was awesome in that game until he ended up getting kicked out. And I felt the post-game press conference was kind of interesting to me because I don't think a lot was being said at first. But then when Ime comes out and he said they lied when he was asked about the players being in the dark, I was sort of taken back by that because all the players have said positive stuff about Ime, right? Jason Tatum called him his favorite coach. Jaylen Brown has waxed poetically on multiple occasions about Ime. So for him to say that, and Jalen and Tatum, they both did a fine job answering the questions, but I was caught off guard that he actually said the players knew more than, or they lied about being in the dark. Because I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think that's actually true? Because I don't. I think there was a small amount of people that know all the details. But so I don't know. That to me was just like, whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah, I don't think the Celtics players knew all the details. But
right.
But I do think that they knew more than they let on when they were first asked about it, when everything went down and Ime was out and Joe replaced him in that very awkward media day, obviously a couple of years ago or year and a half, whatever it's been. You know, that felt like there was a little bit of just follow the directive from the front office, you know, bite your lip. You don't know anything. These guys travel together. They're with each other more than their families. They run in a very tight circle as a basketball organization, coach and players and, you know, support staff and everybody else involved. For me to believe, guys, that no one had a clue what was going on with Ime Udoka because he was just that good at hiding it, or honestly even cared to hide it, which according, you know, by all accounts, he really didn't. He was, you know, already long separated from Nia Long. Gary Washburn told us that many months ago on this show. Like, there, he already was free to do whatever he wanted to do in terms of his own marriage. Didn't mean, you know, go break up somebody else's potentially, but you know, for no one, like, I mean, these guys, I don't want to like insinuate any individual, but just, you know, in general, if we're speaking in generalities, professional athletes, a lot of what you hear is true. You know, some run around on their significant others, especially when they're on the road. You know, that I don't know that every guy has every girl in every city kind of thing, like maybe it used to be back before social media got as big as it is, but to be completely in the dark. It's one thing to not know everything, to be completely in the dark. You know, I'm not saying Ime should have said what he said, but I don't think he's wrong. I think the guys jealous about how little they knew.
Well, Jalen even said they thought maybe there was more than what they knew. I'm not saying that nobody had an idea of what was going on. I just feel like surely I would expect that everybody doesn't know all the details of what happened. And the other thing I would just say, like circling back to what I said originally, I was just surprised that Ime said that like last night because of the fact that at every turn, the players have completely supported Ime. Going back to, remember last year when he was up for the Brooklyn job and Ime and Jalen came out and he said he's happy that he's going to get another opportunity. Jason Tatum said something similar to that. So I just feel like the players, it felt like, have always had Ime's back. And Ime said a lot of nice stuff last night. He also said that he let a lot of people down. So he said a lot of the right things. I was just surprised that he actually said that last night. I'm surprised to hear him say they lied.
I'm not surprised. How many times during the short stint we had with Ime Udoka did Ime just run everybody over with the bus during a press conference? Like, it happened.
It's true.
Like, the classic one is the Knicks loss they had when Ime just took the bus and ran over everybody and then backed it up over everybody's dead body and did it again. Like, Ime's just been that guy and part of it, like, I kind of loved it, but part of it was really strange. Like, that Knicks press conference, I think I had Chris Grenham on back when Grenham was working for Forbes. After that game, Kaufman, I think you had a scheduling conflict, and it was tough because it was such a disastrous loss. I think the Celtics blew some ridiculous lead to the Knicks where they were up like 20 or something like that, and they just completely melted down at the end of the game. And it was the most bizarre press conference I think I've seen in a very long time, and Ime just took turns running guys over with the bus. This is just another one of those things where it's like Ime, you know, is going to always just be kind of this guy. And I'm not trying to say that's bad or it's good in terms of like his press conference demeanor. Like, it really doesn't matter. You know, he seems to be getting the best out of his players currently. So, you know, got to give him credit there. I just thought it was weird. I'm with Barrett. It was just kind of weird after publicly the guys that were on the team when Ime was there have publicly backed him pretty much every time they could. They've shown him as much support as you possibly can without people groaning too much about like, hey man, like what are you doing? Like, he's gone. He like blew it. He had a great opportunity and blew his chances to
fumbled the bag.
Yeah, to you know, to go to the NBA Finals again and to maybe win a ring with the way this team was progressing. But I do also enjoy the fact that they absolutely boat raced that team and really took it to them. And it was like, hey, remember what you this is what you left behind you, mate. This team was really cooking and really coming together, and this is what you left, and this is what you you screwed up. This team is firing off cylinders and is the favorite right now to win the NBA title. So, you know, I'd love to say it was just another game, boys, but that was not just another game. That was like the Pritchard alley-oop off the backboard at percent at the end of the game. That felt a little personal to me, but what am I saying?
Well, and I saw Jay King tweeting about that too, because of the thing that happened last year when Pritchard, with family in attendance, you know, went off late in the game when it was well out of hand and kind of ran up the score a little bit in terms of individual performance. And he got railroaded by Ime behind the scenes about it. And it was just like, basically, you don't do that. And he talked about it again post game, like you said, Ev, never a guy that would shied away from a microphone when it came to calling guys out publicly. And yeah, it did feel like it's possible that there some of that flash late in the game, when obviously that thing was well out of hand, was a little bit of a, you know, a jab, maybe a subtle jab. But, you know, Himmelsbach also responded to that and said, you know, but by the same token, Peyton Pritchard was literally the only guy in the team that went over and gave Ime a hug after the game. And they have the Portland ties, obviously, the Oregon ties. So who knows? I mean, I'd like to think Udoka doesn't take that stuff directly personally. I'm sure enough has happened in his life and career over the last couple of years that are far more significant than that, but it did. It felt nice to have that be a decisive win with them on the other side. And what was the remark too? He had made a comment about basically like the way that it felt like kind of a shot of what was it, against Tatum and Brown, or was it in support of Tatum and Brown with respect to the defense that was being played in that game too? I saw that quote thrown out a couple of different ways, but it was something like, you know, I don't remember guys like guarding us the way that Tatum and Brown just guarded us. If I heard it right, it felt like, and maybe I'm completely wrong about this for anyone out there watching or listening, but if I heard it right, it felt like kind of a, you know, some of that defensive effort and intensity wasn't always there when I was in Boston type of thing.
Well, you know,
yeah, he said, I would have loved for people to guard Jaylen and Jason Tatum the way we guarded them tonight when I was here. That's what he said.
Oh, so he was calling out his own team again.
Yeah, he was calling out his own guys.
So, yeah, like, he's pulling himself, you know, calling out guys
on his
team.
So very, very on brand.
Just typical Ime being Ime.
Yeah, very on brand.
I can't help it, though. You know, geez.
Yeah. Man.
So I'm going to be honest with you, though. It is fun to look at some of, like, the differences in the ways that Joe and Ime kind of handle just post-game press conferences and talking to people in general. Like, it is different. It is, I think, significantly different. Like, Joe is, you know, and we're getting to know him a little bit more personally. Like, I liked last night how he was like, don't you want to ask me about my favorite movie scene again? Like, you know, when we talk about The Town or anything. But I've enjoyed the Joe Mazzulla post-game press conference a little bit more than I think the Ime ones. The Ime ones used to baffle me.
I think we've been spoiled, like, since Brad. Like, Brad kind of got boring, and now we had Ime, who was incredibly entertaining. You never knew what he was going to say. He doesn't hold back whatsoever. Like, that was his whole personality too, right? Like, if you go back to that Celtics team, he was like the toughest guy on the team, right? Like, I bet nobody on the team would have wanted to fight Ime because he is a like, big, strong dude. And then we have Mazzulla, who is another guy where it's like, you don't know what he's going to say either. And yeah, I mean, the other day he was talking to Bobby Manning and he started saying, I like this. Like, are you wearing a suit? Like, yeah. So I thought that was funny. And I do like, Joe's obviously has his back and forths with certain guys, but I do feel like the one thing I give Mazzulla a lot of credit for, and whether he ends up being wrong or right about this, he's very strong in his convictions. Like, he believes in certain things and he's going to go with that. And he, even if it doesn't work, he's going to keep going to that. And he believes in that. The only criticism I think that Joe, and I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with this, he's been way better this year. And you can say the personnel is better too. Obviously, he's way more comfortable because this is his coaching staff. I do think there is, and this is not me taking a shot at Marcus Smart, but when Marcus Smart was here, it's a very strong personality. Now, sort of, the food chain is easier, right? Tatum's at the top, Jaylen and Porzingis, all these guys fit in after that. I think that makes it easier. And the other thing I would say is, like, he's doing a lot of creative stuff defensively. The stuff that he does with Drew Holiday, I mean, in the the zone they'll break out where they start in zone and then they're in man, like all this different stuff that we didn't, I'm not saying they didn't do interesting things last year, but I feel like they're doing a lot more of that stuff this year. And we should expect that in year two if you juxtapose it to year one. And I do think going back to something Joe said prior to the season where he mentioned the fact that last year he took some of the criticism personally, but he had to like take a step back and realize it's because I'm the coach of the Boston Celtics, right? So it was almost like he was taking it too personally, like, hey, they're attacking me. It's like, I got to look at it from the perspective of, no, they're attacking the coach of the Celtics, right? And because the fan base wants excellence. So I think he's had a really good season. I mean, once in a while, like some of this end of game stuff, I dislike some of the stuff they run. Like, it's just like, okay, Tatum on the right wing, isolation, like, because he's so good at, like, when he actually draws things out after timeouts, he's really good. Like, in the Minnesota game, for example, they take a timeout, they get Tatum in isolation situation all by himself with the other side cleared because Jaylen took somebody with him to the other side. But nonetheless, my point being, it's Towns versus Tatum one-on-one with the whole side of the court. Tatum ends up getting the free throws, of course, missed the second, Derek White, with the rebound. But they were, what, first in the NBA last year after a timeout in points per possession, second this year. So he does draw up a lot of good things when they come out of that. But I don't know. I feel like he's been really good this season. I really do. And I feel like also, like, it's probably going to be Daigneault that's the coach of the year in the NBA. There's some other candidates. Like, Ty Lue should certainly be a candidate after what's happened since the Harden trade. But I think Mazzulla should definitely be in the conversation again with the season he's had. I mean, they're 19-0 at home. Like, this is, I'm into this too, by the way. Like, I'm all in. I want them to chase down the record.
Yeah, same. I
was just going to say, I think, you know, going back to what you were just saying about Joe's comfort, and he's acknowledged this as well. I think it's just comfort within his own skin. You know, even putting aside, obviously, the basketball strategy and the personnel and the schematics and everything else that you acknowledged, all of which is true. I think the biggest thing for Joe Mazzulla, like, no one ever looked at him, I don't think anyway, at least people that paid attention and questioned his basketball mind or his acumen. It was more just, is he ready for this? You know, there were moments last year when he was thrust into that position, obviously. He was not, you know, in any way, shape, or form prepared for it as someone who had never coached above, you know, mid-level college. I mean, the guy wasn't even a D1 head coach, and he was a second, you know, the whole second row Joe guy. He was, you know, he's on the staff, you know, like way down the line. And all of a sudden, you in your 30s, by the way, are the head coach of the Boston Celtics. And I think, you know, even though it was overall a, I mean, however you want to define success, right? It was a generally successful year. They just, you know, obviously exited in the playoffs quicker than anyone would have preferred, especially coming off of what had happened. But, you know, for a year one NBA head coach with no experience at that level beyond being an assistant for a little bit, you know, I think he did fine. Not great, but fine. And that was one of the bigger things that he has talked about going into this year and even at points this year is just his own personal comfort within his own skin and doing the job. And I think we're, you know, for all the reasons that you outlined and so many others, I think we're just seeing that really play out and come to fruition here as we sit midway through the year.
Yeah, I think if you go back and listen to that J.J. Redick pod he did early mm-hmm. the season before the season started, the comfort level you're both talking about comes out there. And it comes down to not just like the daily preparation, preparing for the season before anything starts and understanding, like, I keep going back to this, we got to have a curveball line he threw out there. And then, you know, Barrett talking about, like, the 2-1-2 zone or the 2-3 zone that they use, and then they switch it as the clock winds down and some of the double-team stuff that they do. And then, like, early in the year, I remember watching a game. They were playing the Wizards and blowing them out. And they just threw out a 2-2-1 press to see what it looked like. And Washington had no idea what to do with it. They had no clue. And I'm sitting there like, oh, this is really interesting. They don't have a lot of practice time. They just don't. In the NBA, you know, you're lucky if you get a couple of practices in a month or whatever. He's using game time as practice. Like, they're blowing this team out, yet they're going to try different stuff, live reps against live bodies who are really trying at basketball. Like, this is good stuff. And so some of the things that you talk about, developing good habits and formulating, you know, schemes and all these things all get done during the regular season. And I think Joe is in his passed this message along to the team as well. They're just taking a lot of possessions I think a little bit more seriously in terms of like trying new stuff and just seeing if it works. And that's going to be the big, like to me, the biggest difference between last year and this year, you know, not from an individual standpoint, but from his team standpoint is how comfortable this team is doing different things. Like they're not just a man-to-man defensive team. Eric Spoelstra showed the world last year. You can't just have one defense. You're going to have a couple because, you know, when push comes to shove, like when one team's so used to certain things that you do, if you have something else to show them and make them think for a while, that could be the difference of you winning and losing an entire series. So I'm thrilled with the development of Joe. I don't know if he's been like perfect, but he's been pretty damn close to it. And this team is, again, they haven't lost back-to-back games since November, I believe, Kaufman. This is an amazing stretch. Yeah. And I think, you know, the sky's the limit for what they're doing. And Joe's at the head of it for sure. No question.
Yeah. You got to go back to, it was Minnesota and Philly at the very beginning of the season after they'd started 5-0 that happened. And I do think it's fascinating. Like this guy took over and he was on Brad's staff, the only like guy left over, and all Ime's guys are here, right? It's like Ben Sullivan, all this group, and all of a sudden he's the head coach. Like that had to be a weird dynamic too, even if all those guys were good guys. And it's weird too, like seeing the, oh, hey, look, it's the old Celtics coaching staff on the other side last night for the Rockets, and now Joe's got his coaching staff. But I do think to the point.
Well, even like Stoudemire, there couldn't have been some options.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to tell me Stoudemire, who had coached at a higher level in Division I, played in the NBA for as long as he did, wasn't like, how?
Wait, yeah.
Why this guy, not me?
Yeah, like, wait, who is Joe? Who's Joe Mazzulla again? Is he the other coach?
He's that guy that I'm always, hey, Joe? sitting behind me? Yeah. Okay, sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave before the season's up.
Yeah. And I would say this, too. Like, I think one thing that, obviously, Joe has now given a lot of ownership to the guys, right? Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And I think that's the one other thing that has really impressed me lately is, Jaylen Brown, his last 20 games, I could run through some numbers. He's been outstanding. This may be his best defensive season. I thought, quite frankly, he was bad defensively last season. He would get lost off the ball. Now he still does that at times, but even last night, like Jabari Smith, like just cut in front of him. And what did he do? He's like, okay, I'm going to just go block this shot and pin it off the backboard, right? Like he made a mistake, but then he made up for it. So I think he's been awesome. And the one other thing, and this is to sort of the Joe point, a combination of Tatum and Brown to go along with Mazzulla is, the OKC game, even though they lost, the one thing that stuck out to me is you have two of the best defensive guards in the NBA with Jrue Holiday and Derek White. Mm-hmm. Neither one of those guys could do anything at all with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And then what happens is at the end of the game, they put Tatum on Shai. And that's something like looking forward to the postseason if they have that type of matchup where, hey, maybe we can go to Tatum on that. And I think that's a maturation process for Tatum, too, because it felt like a lot of that game they were playing through Kristaps Porzingis. And it wasn't as if, and my boss, Bill Simmons, made this point to me on my pod. He's like, it wasn't like Tatum felt like I have to go score on the other end. It was like, what I have to do in this game is try to shut down Shai on the other side to get us back in it. So I think that shows a maturation, too, where it's like, hey, this is a Porzingis game. This isn't my game, but I can do everything else on the defensive side. And that's really how you got back in the game, is Tatum taking on Shai.
Yeah. So to put a bow on this particular conversation, and the only reason I bring it up is just, again, recency bias, the fact that obviously the Celtics just faced off with Ime Udoka's Rockets for the first time here back in Boston. You know, let's just pretend everything that played out didn't play out, and you're looking back. You're thinking about, you know, year one, obviously, with Ime, the only year versus, you know, where we are, and you know, you could have at that divide, that fork in the road, you could have made a choice. Do you think, and I ask this because you wouldn't believe, even with the team at 30-9, or maybe you would because social media is a cesspool, you would not believe how many people I still hear from after a rare loss or even a tight win that it's biggest issue with this team going into the playoffs is Joe Mazzulla. It's not a player. It's not that, you know, it always comes back to the coach. Maybe it should, maybe it shouldn't. And I say that about sports in general, not specifically Joe. You know, maybe it should always come back to the coach. In certain people's minds, it does. Would you say, Barrett, this team is in better hands with Joe Mazzulla than it was with Ime Udoka? Or had Ime been able to continue on here and been the guy, would they be closer, even though they're right there on the cusp, would they be closer to a championship?
Man, that's a tough one, because I do feel like one of the things that I felt where Ime came up short in the playoffs is he leaned into defense. And look, they were 2 wins away from winning an NBA championship, right? Even though I think that Golden State was the superior team. Like, I don't look back at that and say the Celtics missed an opportunity. They were outplayed. Like, and certain guys were not ready, right? Jaylen Brown.
2 minutes away from being up 3-1 in that series. I look at it as a missed opportunity.
Fair enough. But I will say, like, they exposed certain things with that Celtics team. Jaylen with the left hand. Jason Tatum, hey, after two dribbles, let's go after him. But at the same point, like, they always leaned on defense. And I do feel like there wasn't a lot of things that Ime opened up offensively for those guys, right? And look, you can say some of it's personnel. Now it's easier for Joe that you have a 7'3" guy that can also shoot threes and can post up. And Tatum and Brown are now 2 years older. But I do think, like, the coaching staff in general is better, like having Sam Cassell and having Charles Lee there. I think that this group is more equipped. My one thing that I fear is, like, doubling down late in games, is because there is this pecking order of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And then I wonder at the end of games, is there's going to be matchups like I was talking about earlier where, hey, the best thing to do here is actually a Derek White, Kristaps Porzingis pick and roll. Is that going to be okay with the star players? And they seem to take on all these different roles throughout the season. So I'm hoping that they'll be okay doing that, but it just, are you going to be willing to do that as the coach, being Joe Mazzulla, right? Because it's still, as we mentioned, it's only his second year. So I think they have more knowledge on the staff when we're talking about the other assistants and being in big battles in the case of Sam Cassell as a player. But will they be willing to push those buttons? 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It's a close game. The offense gets stagnant. Tatum doesn't really have it going. Jaylen doesn't really have it going. Are you going to start saying, hey, let's play through Kristaps? That's the question that I have. So, I mean, a long way of answering your question, I do think they're better off right now with this coaching staff, even if you'd say, hey, I'd take Ime over Joe. I feel like at this point, I feel pretty comfortable with what they're working with. Now, I could look like an idiot a couple of months from now when Joe doesn't call a timeout when he should be calling a timeout or something along those lines. But I don't know. I feel a lot more comfortable than I did entering the season.
I don't actually really hear people have complaining about timeouts this year. That was a last season thing.
If you don't understand why they do it by this point, then I just don't know what to tell you. Like, you know, I don't think Joe's going to not call timeouts when we get to the playoffs. It's more about trying to get this team to do it without using that timeout as a pacifier. Like, you know, but, and I think Joe's done a little bit of a better job this year calling timeouts. I think people have sarcastically talked about it online, but I think he's done a better job trying to end runs with timeouts in games that really matter and games that don't. He doesn't really care, but like in big games, like he will do that. He'll call more timeouts when it comes time to it. Like I know he tried to stop the bleeding in Milwaukee a couple of times, but there was just nothing he could do at that point. Back to the original question, this is a fascinating question between Ime and I mean, look, Boston's been blessed with the last three head coaches. All three of them are great. It's funny that this team now has all this talent. I would love to know what Brad would do with all these guys, because what Brad was doing with like Gerald Wallace and like Brandon Bass, Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, like that's just like stuff a legend at this point. Imagine having this.
There's still people out there that believe Brad Stevens was a less than head coach.
That's
I would have loved, to your point. I mean, this was what's so exciting about what we're seeing, and I don't even mean the results. I just mean the roster, the makeup, the way they play. This is Brad Stevens' vision come to life, and it took, you know, no slight on Danny Ainge. I really like, largely Danny was a successful president of basketball operations here in many ways in terms of roster building, team building. I know it was just the one championship, but you know, in order for Brad's vision to again come to life, Brad had to be the one putting the pieces together.
Yeah, and it's important that him and like if you ever listen to like Michael Lombardi, he talks a lot about, you know, the synergy within an organization. And right now you're seeing really good synergy between the head coach and the president of basketball operations and the guys on the floor. I mean, it's a very consistent message from the top all the way to the bottom, and that's what good organizations do. And Boston for, you know, again, we'll ignore the 90s for a little bit, but ever since they made the KG trade, has basically run like a world-class organization from the top to the bottom. There hasn't been a lot of, oh, we don't know what's going on. There's a lot of confusion. There's not a lot of, you know, outside of Ime doing the stuff that he did. Not a lot of people, you know, getting out of line. I mean, it's just exactly how it's supposed to go. And then, you know, you have Wick at the head of it, you know, and I think Wick has, again, we'll see. Coffin, you and I have talked about this a lot. Like, he's, you know, Wick has been one of these guys like, oh, when the right team's here, I'll pay for it. We'll see if Wick's willing to, you know, pony up the tax money when this team, you know, you're looking for Holiday and White extensions,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, the message is consistent. And I think it's a little unfair to say like, hey, like Ime would be, because Ime is a great coach. Like, the one thing that I think some people miss is, you know, take the discretions out of it. Hell of a head coach. I mean, again, Houston, yeah. Going into the year, if you had told me Houston would be a top 10 defensive team in the league, I would have told you were nuts because of the guys that they had on the roster. They add Dylan Brooks, and all of a sudden, they're awesome at defense, and Ime's got guys really buying in. Like, that's really impressive. And again, as much as we want to focus on the off the court stuff, Ime is a hell of a coach, man. And I guarantee you, this team would be still really good with Ime, with Joe, with Brad. Wouldn't matter. This team's stacked. Again, I like where Barrett's at, though, in terms of, it's interesting to see the differences between Joe and Ime in terms of like, offense versus defense. What do you guys value more? We know Ime is a defensive head coach. I don't know with Joe. I kind of vacillate between both of them because of the way they, I mean, they're top two in both offensive and defensive rating. So what is Joe? Is he just awesome? Is it personnel? Is it focus? Like, I don't even know what it is. It's
well, I think on defensively, they just have so many smart players, and in particular, White and Drew. Like, the stuff that they can do is just, it's unbelievable, and it allows the coach to do so many different things. But I do think the other point, like, just getting back to Brad, not his coaching, but his GMing, if you will, if I can even use that as a term. The fascinating thing to me is just, like, he totally understands the direction of where the NBA is going, from the sense of, this team is not going to stay together for 4 years. There's no way that they can keep this team together. So going back to, like, I was talking about whether it's a missed opportunity or not, like, this is their best chance to win a championship. This current team is going to be their best chance, because next year, this whole group may not be together, or, knock on wood, like, all these guys are going to be a year older. Do you have injuries? Like, what does Al look like after next season? Heck, at times, like, what does Drew Holiday look like, right? I mean, this is a guy that's got a lot of mileage. So this is, like, the year to break through. And remember, you're paying Jaylen Brown a supermax. You're going to have to give Jason Tatum a supermax. So you're not going to be able to keep all these guys together, and it's going to be difficult to build this team with role players. And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just pointing out the fact that because of these new restrictions that the league has, you have to go for it now. So Brad looked at it as like, I have this window when we're giving Jaylen the supermax, or about to give him the supermax. We know Jason Tatum's getting his supermax. I get to go for this now. So what is our biggest problem? Well, in the postseason, for the past couple of years, we run into these offensive issues where we just get stale. We get stagnant. So you know what we're going to do, going back to what Valenti said about the comment about the curveball? Let's get one of the most efficient post scorers in the NBA. So, okay, boom, we got that. Now, in that deal, of course, you send out Marcus Smart. Damian Lillard gets traded to Milwaukee. Hey, the Drew Holiday guy's available. How much closer does he get us to a championship? Well, a lot closer, right? Because we're talking about one of the elite defenders of the past decade in the NBA, and he can play some point guard. He's had his ups and downs this year. He was red hot in December shooting the three, but he's a really good shooter. And guess what? He's not going to be overtaxed as an offensive player, because what is he, the fifth option on this team? Like, with the starting lineup, he's the fifth option. So that's another piece where it's like, okay, we can be more versatile defensively. We can put him on Giannis at times. We can put him on Embiid. We can put him on point guards. We can put him on small forwards. We can put him, like, he legitimately, like, people say, oh, he can cover 1 through 5. He legitimately has done that this season. So I give Brad a ton of credit for saying, like, I don't really care about the future at this point. And they've done a good job. They have not given up a lot of assets, right? Like, they got draft picks in the Porzingis trade, right? So they have not given up a lot of assets. And he's gotten, like, the perfect players to. Because one thing I'll say, and I know a lot of Celtics fans may disagree with me, I don't think that Tatum's in, like, he's a great player, a top 10 player, like, in the same upper echelon category as the Giannis's, as the Jokic's, right? And that's okay when you build your team like this, because he has better support than all those guys. Because I would argue, like, part of the reason Porzingis is here is because of the shortcomings you've had in terms of the offense breaking down in the postseason. So I'd give Brad a ton of credit for the vision. And heck, Porzingis didn't have to come here, but he wanted to come here to win a championship. So you have to give him credit too, because he could have gone to a bunch of other teams, but he said, I'll opt in so I can get traded to this team.
Yep.
Well, as you noted, Celtics window is now to paraphrase Paul Revere, or hell, just to paraphrase, John C. Riley as Jerry Buss, the Thunder are coming. So you better get something done, because that team is going to be dangerous, obviously. And one that people are going to be betting on, Ev, in the not too distant future. Is there something on FanDuel that we can bet on? Will the Celtics ever lose a game at home?
I think we should look. We have the right guy on this particular pod to maybe suggest something that Barrett's boss might have a little more sway with FanDuel than we do. But that's not a bad idea. Throw it out there. I don't have it yet. I don't think they have that, but I think they might want to start thinking about that.
I mean, some opportunities were out there to will the Pistons ever win a game this season? You could make that bet.
Well, especially because after the Denver game, because the Denver game coming up later this month is going to be a tough home game. I think they'll get the 20-0, but the 21, I think, is the Denver game. After
Friday night, yeah.
Yeah, yep. you can talk about that if they win that game after that.
We'll jump ahead. We'll get to that.
We will get to that. But right now, we're going to take a quick break and tell you today's show is brought to you by FanDuel. NFL regular season completely done. Playoffs are here, and it's time for you to get on the action with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed, win or lose, when you place a $5 bet. So $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Win or lose. Like, I was going to talk about what do we like, boys, for the Monday night stretch between Buffalo and Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay and Philly. But it doesn't matter, because no matter who you gamble on, you're going to win. Doesn't matter. I mean, personally, now that the game has been moved to Monday night, I like the Bills at home. That minus 10 is a lot. But money line at minus 500, which is not a lot of juice. But to get 150 even bonus bets, like, who cares? I like the plus 10, but if we're just doing straight money line, I like the Bills. And then Eagles Bucks, boys, I have no feel. Zero feel for this game. I can't actually pick the Bucks. I just actually can't do it as much as I want to do it. I just don't know if I can do it. Anybody any strong feelings here? Because I just don't know where to go.
Already made the bet. Bucks plus 3.
I actually like the Bucks on the money line, plus 132. And if you want to get really frisky here, you can parlay that with Mike Evans, over 68.5 receiving yards, because that defense has been bad for Philly with Matty Patricia running that. That's plus 253 for the Bucks to win and Evans to go over 68.5 receiving yards. And then we could have the Bill Belichick conversation. What are the odds on FanDuel for Bill to go to the Eagles after Nick Sirianni could get fired?
Oh, man. Do we need to – might have to look at that. Hang on a minute. I might have to build that if anybody wants to kill some time, but that's pretty interesting because the rumor's growing. That's all I'll say. The rumor's growing that if Sirianni – actually, I don't think they'll fire him, but it's something that they should discuss internally. So much to bet on, including whether Belichick's going to be the head coach of your favorite team, all that favorite stuff, same game parlays. There's a new Explore tab that's got a bunch of fun things you can combine together. The Parlay Hub, obviously, for the most popular parlays. And so much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston. Make your first bet a layup. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas City under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino LLC. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issue is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com. RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text next step to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-77-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 100gambler.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Call 800-327-5050 50-50 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
I'm sitting here making my football bets.
Yeah.
While you're going through all that.
Smart. Good. Smart.
Tony Pollard rushing yards over.
Tony Pollard's been bad.
Carry attempts. All right. Let's talk a little bit more before we do wrap up about this team, obviously, and what is to come. And you both alluded to it, this, you know, how Barrett said he's all in on this home winning streak, Evan questioning, you know, what's in store. Well, let's take a look at the upcoming slate. Now, obviously, you got to play the game in Toronto on Monday, get a little bit of rest and every other kind of thing. So on Wednesday, back home against the Spurs, which, you know, most rightfully believe that should be an easy win for Boston. You know, we've said these things before, though. I mean, how tragic would it be if it ended like that? But it should be a win going away for Boston. So then it's Friday night, less than a week from now as we sit here. Friday night at home against the defending champs, Nikola Jokic on the other side, the Denver Nuggets. If the Celtics should get through that, you still have another test. You know, just before my birthday, by the way, in a couple of weeks, the Clippers are in town. The Clippers, who are playing much, much better, believe it or not, with James Harden. And you know, Ty Lue's got that team a machine right now. Paul George is playing well. Kawhi Leonard, when he plays, is playing well. The, you know, supplemental players on that team, Powell, among others, you know, Zubac, they're playing well. That game is Saturday the 27th. So you got back-to-back home games coming up here after the Spurs game that are incredibly challenging. So how do we handicap the chances of keeping this home winning streak alive?
Well, I feel really good about Wednesday against the Spurs. The Nuggets game, I think, is going to be fascinating because I wonder how they're going to match up. Not that anybody has like a good answer for it, but I wonder how they're going to match up with Jokic in the starting lineup, right? Because you don't really want to put Porzingis on him, like, because that's not the type of player that Porzingis, like, you rather Porzingis, like, they've done a lot of him in the Roma role, right? Where he's off the ball defending a non-shooter and, or somebody at least they're willing to let shoot. Now, that did burn him in the game against Oklahoma City when it was Giddy, but be interesting to see how they deal with Jokic. Obviously, that's the biggest mismatch they have in that game, and the biggest mismatch maybe in the entire NBA, no matter who he plays. But I don't know. I feel like the Celtics are, I mean, depending on injuries, and we're like, what, 6-5 days away. Like, depending on injuries, I feel like the Celtics will come out firing in that one. So I feel like they'll at least split those two games, the Clippers and the Nuggets game. At least split. You know what? I'll predict they win them both. You know, they win.
Split doesn't keep the winning streak alive.
No, but it can still keep you in a chance to get to 40-1, which is would tie the record. Who, I think it's the 86 Celtics, and I think somebody else went 40-1 too. It may have been one of the Warriors teams or a Spurs team went 40-1. A couple of teams have gone 39-2. A couple of those Bulls teams,
maybe.
Yeah, it could have been one of the Bulls teams, but I'm gonna. You know, they seem to get up for these. I mean, Milwaukee, notwithstanding, they seem to get up for these big games at home. So I can't, like, I feel like I got to go now Friday night. I went last year when they played the Nuggets at home. I never seen Jokic play in person. But I can't wait for that game. That is going to be electric.
Because we have something called the internet, I decided to look it up rather than just guess. The 85-86 Celtics, as you noted, the other, the 15-16 Spurs.
Yeah, that's the same year the Warriors broke the record. I think they were also like 39-2 that season when they ended up, what, they went 73-9? I think they were 39-2 at home, and they didn't have the best home record in the NBA. How crazy is that?
They went 39-2 consecutive years, 14-15 and 15-16.
Wild.
Yeah, it's insane. That's
amazing. I'm trying right now. I have the basics of it. I'm trying to do a little bit more, but obviously we're doing it on the fly. It's a little bit difficult to do. Boston, we all know, 19-0 at home, but you look at the road records for both the Nuggets and the Clippers. Nuggets are 11-9 on the road, and the Clippers are 9-9. So,
That's good.
That's great. That's great. Obviously, everybody's not as good on the road as they are at home. But those aren't elite road teams either. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, how many points per game they can go that far. Brian will find it for me in the time that I'm talking here. But it's not like they're playing juggernaut road teams. And honestly, there aren't a lot of great road teams this year, like, anyway, to be honest with you. Like, Boston at 11-9, you know, going to be kind of up there for road games. Obviously, the dominance of 19-0 at home. But they're just not great road teams this year. The Thunder, 11-6 this year on the road. That's extremely impressive because everybody else isn't close to that. You got a couple of 10-7s with the Sixers and the Pacers. But Boston's elite home record stands out no matter what you're looking at. It's just more of like, okay, so if they're on the road, you know, what are the Nuggets score per game? And, you know, obviously Boston's ridiculous at home, so obviously it's always going to look great. But if you want to break it down to that level, it'd be interesting. I do think they'll get through both these games. If they lose one, it's going to be to Denver, though.
It's twofold. I agree with that, but here's why. One, I just think Denver's a better team. Two, more importantly, in this context, they're going to be very rested. They play Tuesday night at Philadelphia, and they don't play again until the Friday game in Boston. If you can get through that game, however, and beat the Nuggets, the Clippers, bad schedule spot. They are in Toronto the night before.
Okay.
And they come to Boston.
So that's going to help us out here a second. Appreciate that. But it's going to be interesting. And then after that, you know, we'll see. But the Thunder come to Boston when, Kaufman? Do the schedule in front of you? Because I'm just thinking of elite teams I haven't played at home yet. And the Thunder
come to Boston in April. So you got to
wait a while for that.
Yeah, you got to get through what the Clippers game does, just to project ahead. I don't know how many people out there listening are still listening because they care about this, but that starts off a 7-game home stretch. You got the Clippers, the Pelicans, Pacers, Lakers, Grizzlies, Hawks, and Wizards all in.
Oh man, what the final three there?
that's a 2-week period between late January and just before the Super Bowl, basically.
I love the fact that they're ending with like the three easiest teams to play. Anyway, sorry, Barrett.
Well, they almost lost it to the Pistons, so who knows, right? I mean,
right.
And I was looking at Denver is only 13th on the road in offensive rating, which is kind of shocking. You figure, oh, maybe it's the defense on the road. They're only 13th. Now the Clippers are the rest point's a good point because we've seen how that affects other teams like the Celtics, but the Clippers are 4th in offense in on the road, a 119.4 rating. And so it's weird that Denver has not been as good on the road. Like, usually, like, you would think, and part of it, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some level of fatigue. I watched them the other night against, and I know Utah had been playing. It's weird. Utah was playing so well.
Playing great.
They go to the Garden, and they get spanked.
Yeah.
And then they during the stretch, they've beaten, like, Philly, they've beaten Milwaukee, and they beat the Nuggets. I was watching the game the other night. Like, they had no answer for Jordan Clarkson. So I do think now, like,
5 in a row now, though.
Yeah, I do think there's sort of a dog days effect with the Nuggets where they've won their championship. You know, we're past like the beginning of the season where you're all excited for the new year. And I think that it's one of those teams that's now is like, hey, let's get to the All-Star game because they know who they are. They know what they have to do. So I do think there's like a dog days effect with them. But that's a good point, though, that they play Tuesday and they could have a chance this week to like make a statement where it's like, all right, we beat Philly, and then we beat Boston in the same week, and that's sort of like, hey, order's restored in the NBA. We're still the best team, and all that.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun week for them. I watched that Utah Denver game, and I'm like you, I could not believe what I was watching with Utah. I was like, what? This is not the team that the Celtics played a couple days ago.
But I mean, what is Danny
like crazy? They've won 5 straight with
they look good. They look good.
120 points in each game, and. Right.
What is Ainge going to do?
45. I don't know. I mean, they're fun, and I guess you could take the next couple of weeks to figure out if you're going to do anything. They have enough ammo to go get somebody if they really want to. They could also sell pieces if they want to. I don't know. That's a tough call. I mean, do they go take a big swing at someone? It's like, it feels like the Zach LaVine trade is just an absolute disaster for whoever gets them because there's so much negative, you know, stuff around that. They will get Pascal Siakam. Do they dip their toe in a different place? Like, I don't know what they do. They're fun though. That game was fun the other night, no question.
Yeah, I mean, they could knock the team off in a short series. They're good. They're talented. They're energetic, fast paced. I mean, they're a playoff team, It's just, I mean, if anyone knows over the last, multiple decades in the NBA, be it as a coach, a broadcaster, a player, and obviously as an executive, Danny Ainge knows how to deal with, wrestle with the question of, is it enough to just be a playoff team? So it'd be interesting.
Utah, maybe.
Yeah, it's a good point, because last year, remember, they were playing well. They were in like the play-in situation, or at least like play, and they traded Conley, who was like the reason. Yeah. Like once they traded Conley, it's like their offense was not stable anymore. It was like their offense. But I'll tell you, like Markkanen, if they really wanted to sell, they could get a lot from Markkanen, because he's legitimately like one of the best shooters in the league. He shoots off movement. That guy's incredibly impressive. It's crazy how they get so, like, Chris Dunn is playing decent for them. Yeah. Colin Sexton's a guy that maybe they would trade to, like, some team would want a guard that could come off the bench and score. Yeah, it's a fascinating situation there in Utah. And I am happy. The one team they couldn't even come close to was the Celtics. That game was bizarre. They had, 17 points in the second quarter, I think, or at the end of the first quarter. It's 40-17 at one point. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah. And then they go beat the Nuggets. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any given whatever night in the NBA. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. All right, anything else that you guys want to work in before we relieve people of their listening and viewing responsibilities?
I'll toss out one thing, or one quick comment, and then one quick thing. So
this is your favorite Celtics podcast. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yes, of course. That's number one. Number two is, how about Syracuse's finest, O'Shea Brissett? Give him some minutes, man. I like it. Get him back. I feel like he responded to Brad's comments, where Brad's like, that wing could be on the roster already. We need a wing with size. But what do you guys feel like they'll do at the trading deadline? Do you think they'll make a small move, or do you think they'll stay pat?
They'll do something. It might be small, but they'll do something. But you don't know what it is, because Brad's really good at not telling anybody anything. I think it's great, because the guys they've picked up, like, I don't know, they talked about John Conchar a while back, and Memphis is totally out of it at this point. So I don't know, if they're more willing to deal someone because they're totally gone and Smart's gone and Ja's gone. But whatever Brad does, A, it's probably the right move, and B, you probably don't see it coming. Like, I know Simmons is really into the trade whatever you can for Caruso because of the defensive acumen and what that would be the best defensive backcourt maybe of all time between Derek White, Alex Caruso, and Drew Holiday would be insane.
Yeah, I'm with you. Michael Pina from The Ringer, he really likes Conchar, who he mentioned. That's an interesting, he called him Diet Derek White or something. And I forget the exact terminology he used, but I had him on the pod after that, and I'm like,
yeah, he wrote about that.
Mike, dude, you're making me fall in love already. Like, Derek White comparisons. But the other thing, I wish they could do something and this is a great team. They have enough right now to win the championship, but they just can't get to some of these wings, Brad was referring to, a wing with size. Like, imagine if they could get Dorian Finney-Smith, and how perfectly he would fit on this team, coming off the bench, shoot perfect. Like, Joe would love him. 3-and-D guy would be perfect, but it's just impossible to get to that. Like, you're not going to be able to get the contracts. And we know you're not trading anybody out of your top six. So that's why it's going to be a small move.
Yeah, whatever move they make, if they make a move, and they could very well just wait for the buyout market. But if they make a move, my question is, I don't believe it's a guy that cracks the top six. The question is it a guy who's impactful enough to crack the top eight? Because that's, that's what all of a sudden you're looking at come playoff time. So are you getting someone that is a better fit for you? And this is providing everybody's healthy, and not everybody will be on a night-to-night basis. Somebody's going to go down at some point for hopefully a very short period of time. But, are you getting someone who gets minutes ahead of the likes of Hauser and Pritchard? That's what I want to know. Because if you're getting someone who checks in even below them, you're getting, nine and lower, then how impactful is it really?
Yeah. Anybody, how do I put this? Anybody interested in a Gordon Hayward reunion if he gets bought out by Charlotte?
Nope.
No? Zero? Zero interest from either of you?
I would, if Gordon's going to come here for the minimum, if he gets bought out, right, you're paying him nothing.
Yeah.
I still like Hayward, man. He can still play. The problem is, will he be available to play? The guy's always hurt. You know what's actually going to get moved is Terry. Terry's playing awesome. yeah. for Charlotte. Obviously, the Celtics mm-hmm. couldn't bring him back. I mean, from a financial perspective, I wouldn't mind Gordon. I saw like bigs too. Like, could you bring a big in? I just don't know if you need it, honestly, because in a postseason series, you're going to be playing Porzingis and Al 99% of the time, right? Like, you really don't need another big.
I mean, it does sound like if you listen to that recent podcast he did, and he was talking about his time in Boston, kind of how it all fell apart. He does at least sound like a guy who would come in and fully understand his place, you know, within the roster and the organization at this stage of his career. That in and of itself would be attractive.
I'm just curious for the Gordon Hayward is the same age as Joe Mazzulla like thing going on, because they played in college together. I mean, like, I don't know if they ever played against each other, but they were in college at the same time. It'd be just kind of fun. It's like Al is older than Joe Mazzulla, which I think is a very fun dynamic in this whole thing.
Yeah. I feel bad for Hayward, like how his time, like he's never been the same guy ever since he had that injury, and it's got to stink being the age that he is, right? What is he, 36, to your point, Flinty, or is he 36? Is he 35, 34, 35, somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere.
35?
Is whatever. I'm going to be 34.
He's 33.
Hayward?
Okay, 33.
Yeah. Just pulled it up. He's 33.
When's his birthday?
Yeah, he's the John Wall draft, right?
He's a March birthday, because remember, he's the same. He and Kyrie Irving were born on the same day, but a year or two apart.
Quite literally, like a month older than me. I didn't expect that. That's a little shocking to me. That's all right.
So yeah, but anyway, I was just saying, like, he's all right. So he's 33 years old, and he's been playing irrelevant basketball since he left this. Like, this is usually the point in your career where you're trying to get onto a contender, and he's sort of gone in the opposite direction playing for
the numbers
Charlotte.
Have gotten worse by the year. I'm looking at his stats right now. And it's not even the fact that he hasn't played more than 50 games since he left Boston either. The whole, you know, like you said, is he even going to be available? But points per game are ticking down, even though the minutes have remained consistent. Field goal percentage is, you know, he's still, you know, as good as he's, you know, other than his couple years in Boston when he was actually pretty efficient. You know, he's actually shooting better than he generally ever did in the Utah days from the field, not from three. But yeah, I mean, he's just not, he's not that guy anymore.
No. And honestly, if he were to go somewhere,
I have to imagine his defensive metrics aren't the same.
He'd go somewhere where he has a bigger role, because like being the eighth guy, ninth guy off the bench in Celtics is not where Gordon Hayward needs to be.
But yeah, that'd be such a weird dynamic with Tatum and Brown.
So weird. I do want to point this out before we go, Kaufman. I want everybody to recognize where in the calendar we are in the Jason Tatum meme. Because the three ball's starting to go down now. Now it's like, uh-oh. he's having the resurgence, the January resurgence.
Yeah.
Where he just is the best player on the planet.
I reference and look at his career splits, and I bet it does perfectly tell the story in, you know, aligning with that meme.
It's incredible.
I don't remember exactly what the meme said, but it was pretty good.
We're watching the second coming of Christ is the what
Is where we're at on the calendar.
That's
now.
Where we're in the calendar right now. And then and then the April one is like, man, if he plays like he did the last 2 months, we're going to win the title, basically.
We're watching the second coming of Christ. So good.
It's about right.
All right. Well, let's call it. It's a good show. It's a fun one. Obviously, great. Thanks to our friends at FanDuel for helping to make this show possible. Of course, to Brian Barrett from The Ringer, everybody at The Ringer, Michael Pina, Bill Simmons, everybody. I mean, everyone under the Ringer umbrella who's, you know, at some point in time. Yeah, I mean, KOC, everybody. Vernon, why the hell not? Let's just thank the Ringer. Maybe the Ringer wants to more regularly do stuff with our podcast. I don't know, but Barrett's a regular. We love the guy. For Evan Valenti, I'm Adam Kaufman. Thanks for hanging out with us. Get us wherever you get your podcast. Just search Celtics Beat, rate, review. Most importantly, please do subscribe. We appreciate that. And let's continue to chase down not only wins, but in particular, home wins. Let's get after that record.